Have you been wondering about what's happening in this country with the anti-abortion bills and the personhood laws and how all of it's going to affect our reproductive rights and our ability to access fertility treatment? Well, if you are, you really need to listen to this episode. We are so grateful today to present to you Barb Kalura, who's the head of Resolve, the National American Infertility Organization, that does so much to support patients, but also to protect us so that we can continue to build the families that we want. So tune in. This is a really valuable, valuable episode. Welcome to Building Your Family. This is a podcast about fertility treatment, donor conception, surrogacy, and all the ways the modern family is built. And today on our podcast, we have a really, really special host. This will probably be my shortest introduction because her name speaks for itself. Barb Kalura is the head of Resolve, which for those of you who may be out of the country and don't know this, this is the National Infertility Organization in the U.S., and this organization has been responsible for so many things, not just supporting patients, even though they do a great job at that, but also advocacy. And that's what we're going to talk about today because it's really important to think about what's happening in our world. It seems like it's far away from us if we're in small little bubbles like I am in the New York area, but it affects all of us and it's going to affect our reproductive rights more and more. So I've invited Barb to come talk to us today and share with us what are the things that we can do to help. So thanks for joining, Barb. It's so good to see you.
Well, Lisa, it's great to be here. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for having me. And what a really warm introduction. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Perhaps we could just dive in and start talking about some of the things that have been happening in this year since you were last on this podcast and all of the things that we really need to think about, where sometimes we think about them with regard to exactly just what they are, maybe abortion rules and things like that, and we don't really see them in the broader scope of reproductive rights. And I've gotten a lot of questions about that. How are these bills, these legislations going to affect my reproductive rights? So could you tune us in into what's been happening this year?
Well, I'm going to just kind of start with two dates. Okay. And get everybody thinking about these bookends of these two dates, and then we're going to talk about why they matter. The first one is June of 2022, and the other is February of 2024. What is the significance of those dates? In June of 2022, we had the Supreme Court ruling in the United States Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. This was the Dobbs decision. This overturned a 50-plus year precedent about reproductive rights and reproductive freedom and people being able to make decisions over their own health. And then in February of 2024, we had the Alabama State Supreme Court come out with a ruling that really shocked us. Why do I bring up the overturning of Roe v. Wade and that Alabama Supreme Court ruling? Well, they are linked, they are connected. And they really tell the story, Lisa, of what we've been doing since June of 2022, but even before. And then it tells the story of what we've been doing since the middle of February of 2024. Let's just back up a little bit. For many, many, many years, Resolve has had to get involved in mostly states, but legislation that was really aimed at restricting access to abortion. Keep in mind, this is way before the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And we saw this happen in a number of states. There even were ballot initiatives where there were states that would take it to the voters and you would vote to decide whether you wanted your state constitution changed. And in those cases, they were voting, do I want our state constitution to now define what a person is? And we started getting involved in this kind of legislation because as we looked at it, we realized this concept of personhood is really about when life begins. Mm-hmm. It's really about defining when life begins. And so it's really, really important in the abortion space, especially if you're a legislator or you're an organization who is against abortion, you want to define life at the earliest possible point because that is how you get a kind of almost like a total ban on any kind of abortion. Well, when we started seeing these attempts to create personhood, legislation or say, this is what a person is in their state constitution, we realized they were actually talking about the fertilized egg. They weren't talking about a fetus. They weren't talking about
a baby.
A baby yet. Mm-hmm. They weren't talking about a live living human being.
No.
They were talking about a fertilized egg. Now, you and I know that a lot of people don't know what IVF is. You and I know very well how this is very science driven and it's complicated. And even many of us who've gone through it have a hard time describing it.
Yes.
But we probably know, wow, fertilized egg, that's like in a lab. You can have a fertilized egg in an IVF clinic in their laboratory with the watchful eye of an embryologist and lab techs, because that's what they do for IVF. They create those embryos out of fertilizing an egg. So years ago, I mean, Lisa, this is like going back to 2008, we started getting involved and started fighting these attempts at personhood because we knew and we were very worried that it was going to hurt people's access to IVF. I mean, if you're defining that fertilized egg as a person in the laboratory, it gets really scary what can and can't happen, especially if these states are putting these personhood statutes in like their homicide laws and that sort of thing. So, God, we got really scared. So for years, we've been fighting those. Thankfully, we were pretty successful and the voice of our community was really, really important. In fact, a lot of times legislators were like, oh my gosh, I don't want to prevent people from doing IVF. So that's the backdrop. We have Roe v. Wade overturned and suddenly we are very, very scared that any future attempts at these kind of personhood efforts could not only go somewhere, but we wouldn't have the Supreme Court to back us up, right? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have the Roe v. Wade in our background to protect us. Honestly, many, many, many of us in this field were very, very concerned and predicted in essence that there was going to be attempts to define a fertilized egg as a person that were going to actually go somewhere. So here's the second date, February of 2024, that happened. The Alabama State Supreme Court, and I won't go into all of the reasons for the ruling, but it's pretty complicated. But they, in essence, said that in the state of Alabama, if any harm came to a fertilized egg, in fact, they talked about it being outside the uterus, that somebody could say that was the wrongful death of a child. And that stunned us, as you can imagine. That was on February 16th, and it had to do with a case in Alabama. So it just impacts the state of Alabama. But as you can imagine, confusion, shock, people were scared. What does this mean? That ruling came out on a Friday. By the following Tuesday, the first IVF clinic in Alabama decided to pause. And then by Thursday, the largest IVF practice in the state, which is Alabama Fertility Specialists, they announced that they were pausing treating patients and doing any more transfers. In other words, they met with their staff. I know they met with their legal counsel. They looked at what this state Supreme Court ruling said, and they determined that it was too great a risk for them to handle embryos and to create embryos with this particular status of an embryo in the state.
Crazy.
So where we are today is we're in a different place than we were a few months ago, Lisa. So this has really changed so much because I don't want to say like the dam has broken, but we now have this incredibly heightened awareness about IVF. And I'm sure you feel like you're living in some surreal country where their presidential candidates are talking about IVF, because I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has never happened before. There's a part of me, and I'm sure a part of you, that's like, wow, this heightened awareness is a good thing. It's bringing this out in the open. We know our community is feeling very recognized and finally heard and feeling like, wow, people are recognizing that families are built through IVF and it kind of normalizes it. However, all of this attention has created some risk. And The risk is that organizations and legislators, both in Congress and at the state level, who really don't like IVF and who really feel strongly about when life begins and really feel strongly that that fertilized egg is a person. Remember going back to my personhood thing, this concerns them greatly. They don't want to see IVF advanced. They don't want to see IVF protected. They certainly don't want to see IVF covered by insurance. We are in a situation where on one hand, we're getting all of this heightened awareness and conversation, which we always love. On the other hand, we are getting heightened attempts to attack us and to attack the way people's families are built and to attack those healthcare workers that are providing that care. So we're in a different world.
Yes. I think it's important for everyone to know that not everybody, as you said, knows everything about IVF. I think there was some footage on the internet with a legislator discussing IVF with someone, and they said, well, what do you think about it? And he said, well, I want to make more babies in the world, not fewer. And the woman said, well, you will have fewer babies in the world if you restrict IVF. And he said, really? And he was shocked. So I think it's really interesting that a lot of people who are anti-abortion are really not thinking about the implications for IVF.
You're 100% right. And so I think there are varying opinions on both sides. I don't think you can paint, you know, the pro-choice or the anti-choice movement into, you know, they're homogeneous, because they're not. In fact, the anti-abortion organizations vary greatly, both in their tactics and what they believe. Not all believe in personhood, and not all, you know, just like you've seen, not all agree whether there should be a 15-week ban or a 6-week ban. I mean, they are not coalesced around how to move forward. And we find the same thing with this. There are pretty influential groups, however, national groups, who are not happy about all of this yay IVF conversation, right? In fact, we have seen it behind the scenes where they have had to rein in, especially members of Congress, and say, actually, we're not that excited about IVF, and we shouldn't be out there promoting IVF. So it's kind of fascinating for me, because I see some of that behind the scenes, and then I see what's put out there in the news or in their advertisements, and I'm like, this is really interesting. It's something that they haven't had to talk about. They're trying to figure it out. But at the same time, those anti-abortion groups are saying, wait, we do not want to be talking about how great IVF is. In fact, what they say is the practice of IVF has a lot of problems. And what we need to really be doing is regulating it. So we are fairly confident that there are people right now drafting legislation to regulate IVF. And why I'm not guessing this, they've actually put this out. There's been plenty of news stories and blog posts and other information that's been put out there for the public to grab, saying we need to be regulating IVF. So our battle is just beginning.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I mean, if you told me that we would have to be fighting attempts at regulating IVF. And when I say regulating IVF, I mean like how many embryos should be created? What should be done with those embryos? Can you imagine legislators doing this and not the doctor or the patient figuring that out? Yeah. So, I mean, they make it sound so easy. Like, well, you can only create, you know, X number of embryos. Well, my goodness, patients hope for as many as they possibly can.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
Are you going to tell me we got to limit it? So Lisa, these are the things that we are now needing to prepare for. And this is going to be a fight that we need everybody involved in. I think you go from this long history of like attempts at personhood that never really went anywhere, to the overturning of Roe v. Wade, to this Alabama Supreme Court ruling. And now we're talking about regulating IVF. You see how it has evolved,
yes,
and where we are. And so that's the fight we're up against. I'm very concerned about some states where we could see this pop up. I'm concerned about it popping up in the U.S. Congress. What I don't want to leave people with, though, is just this fear. You know me, we're an advocacy organization. We're all about finding your voice and advocating for yourself, but also advocating for policy change. And so this is a chance for people to get involved, like maybe they never have before. You know, if you're one of those people yes. that have been on the sidelines, that's fine. Guess what? I need you.
It's time. Yes. You've got to roll up your sleeves. It's the time. Absolutely. My name is Lisa Schumann. I'm a therapist, a researcher, an author, and I am passionate about helping people find a better journey to parenthood. I created the Center for Family Building to help people understand how to make decisions, not just for the short term, but for a lifetime. We have group counseling, individual counseling, couples counseling, and lots of other services that can help people find the answers that they're looking for. Just take a look at our website so you can see a few of the thousands of people we helped build a better path to parenthood. The decisions you make are too important to leave up to chance. Arm yourself with the right information. Take a look at our website and sign up for a session with one of our therapists, join one of our groups, or access one of our programs, and you will quickly see why our strategies are so effective. Now back to our episode.
And, you know, not to further complicate it, but, you know, before I got on with you, Barb, I was just looking and Googling and ChatGPTing some ideas about what could potentially happen. And it's fascinating and sad at the same time that it seems like there's so many opportunities for these people who are anti-IVF or anti-abortion to try to restrict every way in. So, you know, some of the searches came up with, well, they could restrict how clinics are regulated. They could restrict insurance. They could restrict funding. They can restrict qualifications for reproductive endocrinologists. They could do all sorts of things to create obstacles for people to build their families. And it's really frightening because all of these people have very deep pockets and Resolve needs more funds now more than ever and more help because at any moment you can turn your back and find some other issue that is just popping up. It's like whack-a-mole.
We've done the whack-a-mole. In fact, I've been using that phrase for years. It's not really a strategy. And I think the change you're going to see from Resolve is a strategy that's preventative, a strategy that's proactive. So you said it, that's going to take money. As an organization that has been kind of at the forefront of leading with the patient voice, we have to be there. We have to be represented. And we have learned over the years that legislators have a very hard time turning their back on their constituents who want to have a family. But you're right. In fact, the things that you brought up are all the same things that we've seen in the abortion provider space where, you know, remember when they even went so far as to say how wide a hallway had to be in an abortion provider facility. And if it wasn't a certain width, then, you know, you couldn't some kind of funding. And so we could see that. I call that nibbling around the edges where it's an annoyance, but it also is all about restricting access. So look, if you are somebody today who believes that a fertilized egg is an embryo or as a person, excuse me, and you need IVF, I can pretty much guarantee you could go to any IVF clinic in the United States and you could talk to the physician and you could say, I want you to retrieve all the eggs you can, but I only want you to fertilize one at a time. I'm willing to pay for it. I'm willing to put myself through all of that. I'm willing to wait to see if it works and then to come back the next month and do another one and do another one and do another one. I am pretty sure that most physicians in the country would say, sure, if you know what you're up against and you are willing to pay for that because your insurance isn't going to cover that, then we are happy to provide that.
And not to mention your eggs will get older every month too.
But what I'm saying is if that's how you, for your personal beliefs, need to access the care, that care is there.
Yes.
Okay. But we don't need to prescribe that everyone should have the care delivered that way just because you believe one way. So that's what we're up against. We're up against individuals who can absolutely get the care in the way that they want it delivered. And let's be honest, they don't even need to do IVF if they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
But if they want to, they can get that care.
Yes, yes.
But if you're going to take your beliefs and say that has to be the standard of care for every American, that is wrong.
Yeah. And that's why we have a separation of church and state, right? So that people are able to do the things that are right for them. I've worked with some very religious patients who want to use a compassion transfer because they don't want to let the embryos expire. And that's fine for them, but not fine for everyone. Everyone should be able to seek whatever care they need to seek. And our country is founded on that. And all of a sudden, that seems to be changing.
This is what we're up against. I mean, I'm not Chicken Little. I'm not the sky is falling, but I'm also talking from fact here in that we have real challenges ahead. Mm. And we have to go out with a clear, concise message. It has to be science-based. We have to have patients involved in that message. And the good news is between Resolve and ASRM, we have two organizations who can do this.
Yes.
We're, as they say, battle tested, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. If this was our first rodeo, yeah, I might be a little scared, but it's not. And so I think that is the good news, is that we have leadership and organizations in Resolve and ASRM who know what they're doing, who have a national presence, who've been involved at the state and federal level deeply, who can get that message out there. We can't do it alone. I mean, Lisa, if people think that just the Resolve staff are going to be able to take this message. I mean, look at Alabama. We had hundreds of patients. I have to tell you, this is not something that has been, you know, publicized, but it's not a secret. We asked people in Alabama to take action over a course of several days because of the different legislative challenges going on to try and get a bill passed that would protect people's access to care in Alabama. And the bill that passed is not perfect, and it needs work. But in a matter of just a few days, Lisa, we have a system on our website where you go in and you put in your address and you write a letter and it goes to your state legislators. Like, you don't even have to look up who they are mm-hmm. based on your address. And we had the same for the U.S. Congress. We had over 30,000 letters.
Wow.
Go through our website to members of the state legislature. Now,
oh my
that's
God.
Not 30,000 people, because we asked people to do different things every couple of days because the bill was going to this committee and then it was going to that committee and then the bill changed and then it went, you know. So there was constant calls to action. You might have had a call to action on Tuesday, but then on Friday we had new information. So we had another call to action, right? But in the course of just those few days, can you imagine those legislators?
So, oh my gosh.
So this is what I say when I say we're battle tested, we know what we're doing. And this is what I love. You know, I love Resolve, but this is one of the things I love. We inspired people to act and we inspired them to do something and to take action. Bear in mind, we had amazing advocates on the ground. People were posting on social media, Fight for Alabama Families, a group of amazing volunteers who really were out there and putting themselves out there. I mean, this was stirred up. We also had the support of the clinics. It was like this. And it wasn't just Resolve doing it. It wasn't just ASR. It was all of us together. And so
great.
That's how you make a difference and you make your voice heard. So if somebody is listening to this and they're like, oh my God, I'm scared. Now I'm kind of inspired. You know, one of the things that I would say is, there's a real chance that we could get a federal law passed. And Lisa, that would protect everybody's access to IVF. And it would protect those healthcare workers who deliver IVF. Let's be honest, the abortion movement never got that done. And you know, you've probably been in conversations with people where they've said, why didn't that happen when they had, you know, the House, the Senate, the White House?
Nobody thought it was going to happen.
I don't know. I wasn't part of those conversations, so I don't know. But certainly, we all thought Roe v. Wade was pretty solid.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think when we saw it overturned, we went, wait a minute, should we be protecting access to IVF? And that's where that started. And we had members of Congress who really said, can I help? Can I lead on this?
That's great.
So we have a bill in the House and the Senate. It's got a lot of traction. It's being talked about in major media. And it is a bill that, if passed, we wouldn't have to worry about these states. Remember, a federal law supersedes any state law.
Yes.
So
yes.
Wouldn't it be great to get that one done? And then I can put my whack-a-mole, what's that called?
Put the hammer back on.
Put the hammer back.
Yeah, that would be amazing. People really need to listen to this and think about how you can get involved, how you can donate, because it's never been a more important time, obviously.
Well, here's the good news, Lisa. We have an opportunity right around the corner. ASRM and Resolve host a federal advocacy day. Mm-hmm. This year, it'll be May 14th. We set the date last fall, so we didn't know what was going to be happening. But what happens on May 14th? So people from all over the country, they participate in meeting with their U.S. senators and their representative here in Washington, and they talk to them about the issues that we care about, especially this one, this bill to protect access. But here's the beautiful thing. It's virtual. You don't need to come to Washington. And even better, we provide all the training. We give you the talking points. You're there to talk just specifically about the Resolve and ASRM issues. And you're a part of a delegation of everybody in your state. You have a state captain. I mean, it's not only really well put together and so forth, but it's fun. And it's informative, but then you have an opportunity to talk to your representative and the senator, U.S. senators, about these issues and tell them how important it is to get this legislation passed. So it's completely free. Thank you to our amazing sponsors who support Resolve and ASRM and make it possible for us to host this. But
it's fantastic.
Yeah, if you go to resolve.org or if you're an ASRM member, you can go to the ASRM website and you can find links to how to register. We need you to register by the end of April. And that way you get trained and you get connected with your state delegation and you're ready, you know, you're ready to go by May 14th. But if this issue has fired you up, then come to Advocacy Day. It'll train you and teach you. And if you already know how to do it, amazing. And we need all voices, Lisa.
Yes, providers, it's so important.
Mental health, attorneys, patients, family members, people who care
everybody.
About IVF, right? Everybody.
Yes, everybody, right? The more voices, the better. Absolutely. Well, that's great. I hope everyone's taking notes because this is so important. Just on a more personal level for patients, I know people are starting to worry also about their embryos. People are saying, should I move my embryos to another state? Should I really worry about doing IVF in my state? What if I'm pregnant? What if I have an ectopic pregnancy? What if? And people are starting to panic, and I'm hearing a lot of that. What would you say, Barb? What would your thoughts be?
I'm really glad you brought that up, and I'm glad that people are asking that question because then we have an opportunity to answer it. There is nothing that has changed in the care of people who are trying to get IVF right now in the United States. That has not changed. The status of an embryo has not changed in any other state except for Alabama. If you are in Alabama, I would talk to your provider and find out, you know, what they are recommending. But if you're anywhere else, you have full rights over your embryos. You don't need to ship your embryos out of state. It's not necessary right now. It's not something you need to be worried about or thinking about. And, you know, I think in things like ectopic pregnancy and so forth, I am not well versed in all the intricacies of every state's abortion laws, but certainly there are some states where there are concerns about how people can get care for an ectopic. But we, you know, at Resolve, we're trying to put out information about your availability of IVF. But I do think that these questions, Lisa, are just going to continue to come up. And
yes.
I think it's a great reminder for all of us to be making sure we're answering that question over and over. You know, I always have to look at the calendar. This is April of 2024. And right now, I would not advise people to move their embryos or to worry about this. I'm not saying something's going to change in May, but this is an evolving situation.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, if you're in one of these states like Florida and you're pursuing pregnancy, you're starting your IVF journey, it's natural to be, you know, a little bit nervous about pursuing a pregnancy in a state where you may not even know if you got pregnant by accident, you were pregnant. So it's a little bit scary for a lot of people. And I certainly appreciate that that is nerve-wracking, but I think it's reassuring to know that right now we're okay. And right now, nothing that we have to really worry about in that way has changed, except if we don't protect IVF. And this is what we're really talking about and is so important. So please, please go to resolve.org and get the information. And the ASRM, as Barb said, is so valuable, the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. If you're concerned about what constitutes an embryo, and as many of you know, not all embryos make it to a person. We would have no problems or statistics with IVF if every embryo worked out. So we know a lot of embryos don't work out and can be used for lots of reasons. They're not all creating people. And so if you want more details about all of that, you can go to ASRM.org and get that information so you can be well educated about some of these issues. But definitely go to resolve.org and give of your heart and your time and your wallet if you can. And is there anything else that we should be telling people, Barb?
I would encourage people to go to resolve.org and sign up for our emails, because what we do is we send targeted emails to people based on their address, and then we can alert you if something's going on in your state. We also have lot of information right on our website about the bills that we're tracking and so forth. So take a look, go to resolve.org, familiarize yourself with the content on there, but really good idea to sign up for those emails and stay, you know, stay apprised of what's going on.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Barb, for joining us. I really appreciate it. We all have to wear orange, make sure that we're wearing orange and showing our colors, that we support Resolve.
Thank goodness I look okay in orange, because, you know, it's one of those colors that doesn't work with a lot of people. And I'm like, I'm grateful that it's not horrendous, but
You look great.
But I will tell you, you know, National Infertility Awareness Week is an opportunity, especially this year, for people to kind of break out of their silence and start with their own friends and family. I like to say their own spheres of influence. If people do that across the country, Lisa, we will have a much better path ahead for us with all of that awareness and education.
Yes. And that is coming up. So everyone go to resolve.org, get all the information you can and get involved. You have a beautiful community waiting for you. And I don't want to forget, for all of you who don't know this, Resolve does offer so much support. You will have access to support groups and people to talk to and a beautiful, warm, embracing community that will help you find your way in this world in addition to supporting all of us. So thank you so much for all you do, Barb. You're really a, you know, amazing human being, and so grateful to have you at the helm. It's really reassuring. I think I can speak for lots of people when I say that. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Lisa, for all you do. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And thanks everyone so much for coming. Thanks for listening to us. And again, subscribe to Resolve. Go to the website and join me anytime at familybuilding.net and come back, because we'd love to have you for our next episode. Hi, it's Lisa Schumann, just popping in quickly to say thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked it, please rate, review, and subscribe, because that's how we keep going and come back for more.